The first reading from Deuteronomy, do not steal. The second reading from 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 to 9. And now, brothers and sisters, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. In the midst of a very severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. For I testify that they gave us as much as they were able, and even beyond their ability. Entirely on their own, they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the Lord's people. And they exceeded our expectations. They gave themselves first of all to the Lord, and then by the will of God also to us. So we urged Titus, just as he had earlier made a beginning, to bring also to completion this act of grace on your part. But since you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in complete earnestness, and in the love we have kindled in you, see that you also excel in this grace of giving. I am not commanding you, but I want to test the sincerity of your love by comparing it with the earnestness of others. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you, through his poverty, might become rich. This is the word of the Lord.
Brilliant. Okay. So, commandment number 8. Only a couple to go after this week. And we just need to keep reminding ourselves of what it is that is going on as the Lord gives the 10 commandments. All right? He's not giving the 10 commandments to everybody. Okay? This isn't something that's just for all of humanity. No, no, no. All right? Remember what happens. The Lord redeems his people. Through the death of the Passover lamb, the Lord brings his people out of slavery in Egypt, brings them to Sinai, and enters into covenant with them. All right? I will be your God. You will be my people. All right? There's something very specific and kind of exclusive in the relationship between the church and the living God. And it is in that context, that exclusive covenantal context, where, you know, all right, I am your God who has saved you. You are my people whom I have saved. There's a relationship going on here between you and me that isn't in play with anybody else anywhere in the world. And so I am giving you these commandments, which are all about teaching the church how to love the God who has redeemed them, and teaching the church how to love one another. All right? It's kind of like the Lord is going to take them into the promised land. And when the people go into this promised land, all right, they're going to be God's people living in this land that God has given them in the presence of God. And the whole thing about that is this is like a little model of what life is going to be like in the new creation. Right? That's what's going on here, okay? The Lord, he lifts the curse in a way as much as he can in the promised land. All right, and you know this, because you know the story where the spies go into the promised land to sort of scout out what the land is like. The plan was, right, they were supposed to come back and go, guys, it's brilliant, it's amazing, let's go, you have no idea how good this is. And of course they came back with a different sermon. That's for a different sermon. The thing I want you to know is, they came back with a bunch of grapes. Do you remember the story? They came back from with a bunch of grapes. Right? And it took two military trained guys to carry this bunch of grapes. Yeah? Have you ever thought that is just weird? Because like I'm not being rude. There's Tesco's around the corner. Yeah? Now, I can go around to Tesco's and buy a bunch of grapes. Now, I'm not the fittest, strongest guy in the world by some way. But even I can manage to carry a bunch of grapes from Tesco's to St. Andrews. Right? You think, what is going on? But there's this bunch of grapes that it takes two, elite sort of SAS fitness guys to carry. And what is going on with that? Well, it's because God has lifted the curse as far as he can within this age. Because this part of earth, that is, if you like, at the center of the nations, this is going to be a drum, like a stage, on which the church will act out kind of new creation life. And the nations of the world are supposed to look in and see the people, like, in relationship with this living God, loving him, loving one another, living in this kind of new creation bubble, as it were. And they're supposed to look in and go, my days, that is, we have never seen anything like that. We want to be a part of that. That we want to be in. How do we get to come in? You see the evangelistic power of what is going on. And that's the, let me show you this, okay? I'm not making this up. Right? All I do is read. You think, where do you get this stuff from, Prentice? Yeah. All I do is read the Bible. Alright, this is Deuteronomy chapter 4. Okay, so the commandments are recited in Deuteronomy chapter 5. So chapter 4, that's pretty close. Alright, so we're talking about the Ten Commandments that the Lord is about to reiterate to his people as they are about to go into the promised land. And it says this, observe these laws carefully, for this will show your wisdom and your understanding to the nations who will hear about all these decrees. And they will say, surely this nation, this great nation is a wise and understanding people. What other nation is so great as to have their gods near them the way the Lord our God is near us whenever we pray to him? What other nation is so great as to have such righteous decrees and laws as this body of laws that I, Moses, am setting before you today? You see how it's supposed to work? The Ten Commandments are like this amazing way of living. That the nations are supposed to look in and go, nobody else lives like that. We don't see this anywhere else. Something phenomenal is going on here with this people and this God. We want to come in. How can we get to be a part of this new creation life that we see being lived out in the life of the church? And that new creation life is what the Ten Commandments are all about. Alright? See, we have this thing I don't know if we have this thing. You often hear the idea that the Ten Commandments are kind of really repressive and restrictive. That somehow the Ten Commandments, the law of God, like seriously, wouldn't it be so miserable if you actually had to live by the law of God? Wouldn't that take all the fun out of life? You know, that there's this repressive, restrictive, tyrannical regime handed down by this joyless God. I'm like, hang on a minute, let's just think about that for a minute. Can you imagine living in a world where there was no hatred? Where there was no anger or contempt? There was no crime? No theft, no violence, no dishonesty, no jealousy, no adultery, no sexual impurity. A world where kids honored their parents.
where there was a pattern of rest that meant people kind of were always in control of their diaries and were never tired or fractious or busy, where everyone was worshiping Jesus, and we all knew the truth of who he was, and there was no division amongst the people of God. Can you imagine living in that world? That's so far away from our experience. It might be that you can't actually imagine living in a world like that. But wouldn't it be brilliant? Wouldn't it be amazing to live in that world? That's the world shaped by the law of God, by the Ten Commandments. There's nothing restrictive or repressive about this at all. In fact, I would say you are only free when you are free to live the way God calls us to live. We're only free as we begin to step into the new creation lifestyle that is mapped out for us in the Ten Commandments. These are not restrictive, repressive things. These are restorative. God is restoring us to our true humanity. And when you get this, you begin to understand some of the stuff that you read in the Bible. All right? Well, yeah, if you meet Christians who are like, oh, no, I'm not one of those Christians who keeps the law of God. I'm not really into the rules and the regulations. I'm like, that is so out of step with biblical spirituality. Because you see, when you understand that God's law, the Ten Commandments, is mapping out for us new creation life, and we realize that this is teaching us who God is. This is restoring us to the image of God so that we can begin to live again the way God is. You begin to understand why in the Bible the saints of God speak the way they do about the law. I long for your salvation, Lord. Your law gives me delight. Right? When we announced we were going to spend a term looking at the Ten Commandments, right? Your heart should have leapt. Like, oh, brilliant! Because I delight in the law of God. I'll tell you now, that's not the narrative I got back. Right? In case you think, oh, well, that's just some weird Old Testament spiritual masochism thing. No, the Apostle Paul is like, right, in my inner being, at the very depths of who I am, I delight in God's law. I delight in it. All right? Or, I love your law. I love it, Lord. I meditate on it all day long. Right? The only thing I can think about is being the kind of person you want me to be. The only thing that captivates my imagination, right, is your law. I love it. I delight in it. Thinking about it all the time. That is biblical spirituality. That is Christian experience. Okay? Because this is God teaching his people, right? You are in relationship with the God whose character is expressed in this law, right? And that's why the commandments are negative. I think that's why they can feel restrictive and repressive, because it's all thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not. Billy Connolly? Probably not the kind of person you expect to be quoted in a sermon. And there are a lot of Billy Connolly sketches I couldn't use up here. But there is one where he talks about being a wee lad growing up in Scotland sitting in the back pew of church. And he sort of characterizes the guy at the front as basically just standing there and going, thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not. And he said, I was sitting in the back pew thinking, too late, Father, I already have. And it's, but it does have that, and kind of religion does have that negative kind of connotation. And when we start getting into the rules and the regulations, it feels negative because, I think in part because the commandments are all phrased with, you shall not do this, you shall not do that, you shall not do the other thing. Right? But that's not a negative thing at all. This is a really positive thing, because the dynamics of the Ten Commandments are, look, here you are the people of God. You are before God. You are in relationship with God. All right? You are being called to live out this fully human, fully liberated, new creation lifestyle. And because that's who you are, now, don't go over here and live like this. Don't go over there and behave as if you weren't a Christian. Don't wander off and behave in ways that are not shaped by your relationship with God. It's not a negative thing. All right, it's a positive thing that's teaching us about where we are in our relationship with God and calling us deeper into that relationship and calling us to stay here. Stay before God. Stay in a place that means you are walking with God and your life is being shaped by the character of God. Right? Because that's what's going on here. The law of God was always supposed to be on our hearts. It was always supposed to be built into the very deepest level of our being, shaping everything that comes out of us, everything that comes out of our hearts. All right? And that's not a New Testament thing. Again, Deuteronomy 6. All right? We looked at Deuteronomy 4. The commandments are in Deuteronomy 5. Deuteronomy 6. These commandments I give you today are to be on your hearts. All right? This isn't something that's imposed on us from the outside as if it is stopping us being who we really want to be. Now, this is supposed to be built into the very deepest levels, the very foundation of our being, so that they are shaping who we want to be, shaping how we want to live, how we want to relate to God, how we want to relate to each other. All right? So it's not like, well, really, I want to be a hateful, murdering, sexually immoral, adulterous kind of thief. But I can't be because God told me not to be. Right? It's no. God's law is supposed to be in my heart, ordering my desires, shaping my ambitions, what I long to be. So I long to be someone who is loving and compassionate and all about reconciliation and sorting out my problems with people. I want to be someone who is pure and righteous and holy. I want to be someone who is generous and self-giving like Jesus. And I think we've seen that particularly over the last couple of weeks as we've seen the way Jesus revisits the Ten Commandments in the Sermon on the Mount, right? And again, I think when Jesus is teaching on the Sermon on the Mount, he's not teaching something fundamentally different. He's not going, well, I know in the Old Testament this was the deal, but now there's something different going on in the New Testament. No, he's going, look, when I gave you these commandments before, this is what I meant. Right? I meant for them to be on your heart, to be shaping everything about you, to be shaping your emotional life, to be shaping your desires, your ambitions, your hopes, your dreams, your relationships with each other. So when I said that you shall not murder, I meant that nothing murderous or hateful should be operating at any level of your being. It shouldn't be in your head. It shouldn't be what you're thinking. It shouldn't be what you're feeling. It shouldn't be how you're behaving. Right? You were always supposed to be a loving people, a forgiving people, a reconciling people. And when I said not to commit adultery, all right, that was supposed to be at the very depth of your being so that in all your dealings with each other, you were characterized by purity. You weren't imposing on other people your disordered desires. You see, the commandments, in spite of the way, or because of the way they're set up, they're not just about the things we don't do. Right? Can you imagine being part of a religion where everything was just about all the things you were not to do? And the commandments are about what you are supposed to do, who you are supposed to be. That we're in relationship with Jesus. We've been liberated from slavery to sin. We've been liberated to become like him. We're being transformed into his image. into the image of a God who is generous, a God who is sacrificial, a God who is self-giving. Right? That's the God into whose image we are being transformed. And so the commandment is, you shall not steal. You're here. You're growing into the image of Jesus, who though he was rich, yet for your sake became poor, so that you, through his poverty, might become rich. That's the Jesus you worship. A Jesus who is sacrificial in his dealings with others. A Jesus who gives everything he can to meet the needs of other people. That's where you are. You are before this God. You're in relationship with this God. You are becoming like this God. So of course, you're not going to be somebody characterized by greed. You're not going to be somebody who's always about what can I get from other people by foul means or fair. Of course you're not going to be somebody who's a thief, who exploits other people to get what you want. Because you're being shaped into the image of a God who gave everything to meet the needs of other people. I was saying earlier, you may be coming to church and going, well, haven't actually, like, you know, mugged anybody, broken into somebody's house. You know, I can go to church and relax this morning. This one I'm okay on. All right? Or you might have learned by now that, you know, we've had 7 of these, and if you're still making that mistake, you're beyond my help anyway, I can tell you that. Because you see, this idea of reducing it simply to, like, literally criminal activity, you know, we see people in the Bible who do that. They were called Pharisees. And this is what Jesus is hammering in the Sermon on the Mount. So you remember the Pharisees, and Jesus said, look, you've heard that it was said, you shall not murder. Yeah? But I tell you that anyone who is, what did you say? You've heard that it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder. And that anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. Yeah? So this idea that it's a crim, you know, if you kill somebody, you'll be taken to court. That's the commandment. If I haven't killed anybody and ended up in court, I'm good on this. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to your brother or sister, Racha, will be answerable to the courts. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. See, Jesus is like, listen, guys, all right, you want to go, I'm only going to apply this stuff to, you know, these commandments, the stuff that could actually get me landed up in court. He's like, fine, you want to play that game, all right, but what you need to realize is that everything you think, everything you feel, everything you say and do, will be judged in the courts of heaven. The law is not just about, you cannot marginalize it or reduce it to some, you know, to strictly criminal behavior. Right? Like I said, the law is supposed to be at the very foundation of our being, shaping everything about us. And that's how Jesus will use the law in the court, his courtroom. On the day of the Lord. And it's similar to think with the eighth commandment. Okay, I haven't actually, like, stolen anything. Or if it was like something really, really trivial. So I'm probably all right here. But Jesus would be saying, no. Something much, much deeper is at work here. Right? This isn't just about criminal activity. And it's not even just about that sort of gray area between where something isn't, it's not really criminal, but you kind of know it's probably not right either. And you know, we're not even just talking about that. Jesus wants to build this in at the very, very depth of our being. Remember, it's about where we are. We are before God. We are growing into the image of a God who gives himself in his totality in order to meet the needs of other people. And because that's who you are becoming, because that is the image of the God you are growing into, therefore, do not be somebody who at any level of your being, in any of your dealings with other people, could be a thief. What he's building is a vision of radical, sacrificial generosity that lines us up with the character of Jesus that we heard about in 1 Corinthians. A Jesus who gives himself in order to meet the needs of others. And as soon as you start meditating on this command, Paul in Romans chapter 3, Paul tells us that through the law we become conscious of our sin. All right, and again, this is just an authentic part of spiritual experience. As we meditate on God's law, God's vision for our life together as his people, you know, this expression of the character of God, as we meditate on these things, we are going to see over and over again, no matter how mature we are as Christians, that in just fundamental ways, our life does not map onto God's vision. That we are falling short of what God is calling us to. And it only takes a few minutes meditating to begin to feel exposed by the law. So what I thought I'd do this morning, just to help you with this, and we can do this because we're coming to the cross this morning, right? So we will be, as it were, exposed by God's law, and then we will come to Jesus, who made himself poor, who gave of himself totally in order to meet our need, in order to give us what we do not have in ourselves. So we need to hear the sermon and communion as part of the same movement this morning. This is what happens. We're exposed as sinners and we're driven deeper into the grace of Jesus and into his righteousness that he gives us as a gift. All right, so I thought to do this. I'll tell you what, before we even think about our dealings with other people, right, because that would be just too scary. But let's just think about our relationship with God. Let's just think about our relationship with God. And let's even just think about one aspect of our relationship with God. And feel the law, or feel the Spirit through the law, showing us how systemically we break the commandment to not steal. Yeah? So, you got your body armor on. And keep your eyes fixed on the table. Keep your eyes fixed on the cross. We're not scared by this. We're not intimidated by this. All right? In fact, we're grateful that the Spirit brings this stuff to the surface, because then we can bring it to Jesus. And Jesus is standing, bring it, this is what I want. Bring your sin to me so I can deal with it, so you can be freed of it, so you can repent of it, so you can, you're liberated to grow into being something different. Yeah? So that's the dynamics here. So let's ask this question. How do we steal from God? How do we steal from God? All right. Well, let me narrow the question down a little bit. How do we use the resources that God has given us? Because God has given us resources, probably a lot of resources. Be interesting for you to sit down when you get home and go, right, over my working life, how much have I earned? All right, and just kind of get a sense of the vast wealth that God has put at our disposal over the course of our life. Right? And to understand that God has given us those resources for a specific purpose. He actually tells us repeatedly in the Bible what he wants us to do with the resources, the money, the time, the energy that he has put at our disposal. Yeah, you see, we're like this guy. We're like the FedEx guy. Yeah? All right, what is the job of a FedEx guy? All right, you give the FedEx guy a parcel, right? He takes that parcel and he delivers it where you tell him to deliver it. That's what the FedEx guy does. Yeah? So imagine you're running a company and, it's a successful company, so day after day, your orders are coming in, you parcel them up, You phone the FedEx guy, he comes, picks them up, puts them in the back of his van, and takes them off. And you're thinking, brilliant, job done. All right, happy customers at the other end. But after a couple of weeks, you start getting like emails and phone calls from not satisfied customers who are going, I ordered this from you and it never arrived. And you're like, what? I give it to the FedEx guy. What do you mean? And so many of these coming in, you're starting to think, now hang on, something's going wrong here. And so you get the FedEx guy in and you're like, buddy, I keep giving you these parcels. They're not ending up where I am telling you to put them. And the FedEx guy goes, well, the thing is, I really love the stuff your company makes. And so I just take it home and use it for myself. And you'd be like, but you're the FedEx guy. I don't give you this stuff so you can take it home and use it on yourself, whether you like it or not. Right, I give it to you, and I tell you what to do with that, who to give it to. And if the FedEx guy is taking stuff home for himself, what's he doing? Stealing. So when God gives us resources, because the church, right, we are the FedEx guy. All right, the church, God gives us vast amounts. In this part of the church, God gives us vast amounts of wealth. And he tells us in the Bible what he wants us to do with it. Like literally percentages, specific percentages. He says, I want you to take this percentage and I want you to do this with it. And if we, like the FedEx guy, just take that stuff home and use it for ourselves because we like it, that's violating the 8th commandment. Right there. And I'm not, people are like, where are you getting this stuff from? I just read the Bible. You know, like, this is actually something God stood before the church and explicitly talked about. Like, over 2,000, nearly 2,500 years ago. This is not radical revolutionary stuff here. Alright? Malachi, will a mere mortal rob God? And yet you rob me. And you're like, what? How are we robbing you? And he's like, in tithes and offerings. Right? God has said, I gave you loads of money. All right? And the tithes and the offerings were for the work of the temple, which was kind of the primary evangelistic thing that was going on in the ancient world. And so he's like, I gave you loads, I've blessed you, I have given you loads of money, and I told you percentages of that money to give, to support the poor in your midst. To support the widow and the orphan. To support the work of evangelism and the proclamation of the gospel to the nations. And you just haven't done it. And it is God who says, you're stealing from me. You're robbing, because you're taking the stuff, that, like the FedEx guy. I gave it to you to give to somebody else and you kept it for yourself. That's theft. Pure and simple, you're violating the 8th commandment. All right? And so, you know, this is like literally, this is just one aspect of our relationship with God before we're going any further. All right, now, a guy who really got this and understood this was John Wesley. All right? Now, John Wesley was a vicar in the 18th century, Church of England minister in the 18th century. All right, now, as a curate in the Church of England in the 18th century, his income, his stipend, was £51 a year. Yeah? All right, let me tell you, as a minister in the Church of England today, it hasn't gone up an awful lot in the last 200-300 years. All right, but he got £51 a year. All right, and he sat down and he calculated that in order for him to live, a reasonable lifestyle would cost him £39 a year. So he took the £39 a year, and used that for sustaining his own kind of living costs. And he gave the rest away to support the work of the gospel and to support the poor in the church. All right, now, over the years, John Wesley became what you or I today would call an A-list Christian celebrity. All right, today he would have had a blog that went viral. You know, he would have been the main speaker on at Spring Harvest and New Word Alive and all that sort of stuff. He would have, books would be churning out. He'd be on speaking tours. Like, everybody would know this guy. And his income rose over the years to about £3,000 a year. Right, which is somewhat more than £51 that he started on. But the thing about John Wesley is, even at the height of his, I want to say fame almost, when he was on £3,000 a year, he still lived on £39 a year and gave the rest away. See, when we get a pay rise, we think, brilliant, I can raise my standard of living. When Wesley got a pay rise, he went, brilliant, I can raise my standard of giving. And when John Wesley died, he had his entire estate consisted of literally a few coins in his pocket and 6 silver teaspoons. No idea where they came from, but that's what he left in his will. All right, but he understood the dynamics at play. That he was being given money, like the FedEx guy, not to spend on himself and his own standard of living and his own comfort. He was being given money to do with it what God told him to do. And it sounds very similar in a lot of ways to what we were reading about in 1 Corinthians. The Corinthian church understood this. They knew that they were growing into the image of a Jesus who sacrificially gave for the benefit of others. And so even though the Corinthian Christians were in the midst of poverty, even though they were facing hardship themselves, they pleaded for the privilege of being the FedEx guy. Taking what God had given them, and rather than keeping it for themselves and stealing from God and from the church, giving it away to support Christians in need elsewhere in the world. Right? You see, this is not kind of like an additional level of hardcore Christianity for people who really want to go for it. Like, this is Ten Commandments stuff. This is baseline, basic Christianity 101. When we said we were going to do the Ten Commandments, somebody said to me, I don't know why we're doing that. Isn't that for the children? And it's interesting, isn't it? We think, yeah, this is for the kids. This is like so basic. This is so like, you know, entry level Christianity that we teach it to the very youngest children in our churches. Right? What we're talking about, what we're reflecting on together this morning is not elite Christianity for the people who've really met. This is just who we are. What we are called to be and to do. And like I said, we're only scratching the surface. We're only taking one aspect of our relationship with God. Like if we really wanted to press in, we could think about our very selves. Because we are not our own. We are bought at a price. We belong to God. Right? So when we take anything of ourselves and use it for any purpose other than what God has given it to us for, we've got 8th commandment issues. Again, when we announced we were doing the 10 commandments, somebody did use the word boring. That sounds like it's going to be really boring. Well, boring is not the word. Traumatic, shocking, disturbing, destabilizing, frightening, all words I would use to a series on the Ten Commandments. Boring, not one of them. Not one of them. This is not boring. It leaves me, week after week after week, it leaves me feeling exposed, which is what the law is supposed to. Through the law, we become conscious of sin. Is that a bad thing? No, it's really not. It's a great thing. Because now we can bring it to the cross. You come to the table later. Is there forgiveness here? Yes. And you may never have really thought you needed forgiveness. See, this is part of the thing, is we tend to just cruise along thinking, yeah, we're doing okay. Oh, eighth commandment, yeah, haven't really broken that one. Don't need to worry too much about that. And then you begin to realize, oh my days, I am far more sinful than I ever, ever dreamed possible. Yeah, that doesn't surprise Jesus. He's not shocked by that. He's not, oh, wow, you're here. Yeah, you see, before you started, I thought you were doing great. I don't know if my death's going to cover this. No, Jesus always knew. He's known far better than any of us have known the depth of our sinfulness. And when he gave everything, when he made himself poor on the cross, it was enough to cover all our spiritual poverty and debt. And he made himself poor so that you could become rich, so that you can become the people he is calling us to be. Is there forgiveness? Yes. Is there cleansing? Yes. Is there healing for where you've been the victim of somebody else's sin? Yes. And there is transformation. Here there is the opportunity to be different, to meet with the Spirit, and to be changed a little more, even this morning, to be changed a little more into the image of Jesus, who, though he was rich, for your sakes, made himself poor, so that through his poverty, you might become rich.